Currently a resident of Suffolk, Virginia. I made it out of Portsmouth alive.
Me too.
Awesome, awesome. Well, I'm going to start from the very beginning. I mean, you know, because that's really what it's all about. And he told me I had a long time to talk, so I'm just going to just spill it just like it was, tell it like it is.
As long as you want.
All right, so here we go. You know, I was in the grips of alcoholism. Anytime I drank, I was getting totally just totaled, you know, drunk. I was in a really bad relationship on top of that, because that's where alcohol took me, like into bad relationships, into bad places, doing a lot of bad things. Well, at least now that I can look back at it, I think it was bad things, okay? Mm-hmm. Well, anyhow, on November 1st, I had been out with this man friend that I had been in a relationship for about 2 years, and we had went out and got extremely drunk, and I told him to let me out of his truck, and he refused to stop his vehicle, and he stopped his vehicle one block from my house. Well, without his expecting me to, I went ahead because I was drunk. I stepped out of that vehicle, and he ran me over. He made a right-hand turn. It ran over my legs. I fell back. I fractured my skull. Had a concussion in my head. And, of course, that put me out of work and everything else. And at this time, I was a single mom, raising 2 children. That was not enough to make me stop drinking, see, because my birthday was November 6th. So here I am hobbling along, got black eyes from this concussion in my head, can't barely walk. And, you know, proceeded to go ahead and drink, and went out, had a couple beers, and came back home because I wasn't feeling too well. And next thing you know, Thanksgiving weekend. It was Thanksgiving weekend, had rolled around, and had a nice little family Thanksgiving dinner with his family. And that next day was like a Friday, and he told me, he said, well, you know, you need to go hang out somewhere else today, because, like, he had other plans, you know. And I got really, really mad, and being the good alcoholic that I am, I said, well, I'll show you, you know. So I had this little pattern of bars that I went to, and I made sure I hit every single one of them. And in that procession, the bars began to close, and I said, oh, but I'm not done yet. So I proceeded to head out to an after-hours club that night, and I was going to make a left-hand turn into a 7-Eleven, but then there were 2 police officers there, and when that happened, I slammed on my brakes, and I did a 360 right in the middle of a 6-point intersection, right there on Rodman Airline, where the 7-Eleven is, a 6-point intersection. Well, I immediately went ahead and just pulled over, because it was apparent they were going to pull me anyway, you know. Mm-hmm. That landed me a DUI. You know, now I'm looking at being a single mom with a messed up head, possibly no job, and no license. And my consequences were pretty severe, you know. I went in jail that night. That boyfriend, he bailed me out. He dropped me off at my house, and he said, don't come near me, don't talk to me, whatever. You know, just totally shunned me away. And my kids actually were with their father for a weekend. They hadn't seen him in like 5 years. So I had that whole weekend to myself, you know, free. And I remember the hopeless, incomprehensible demoralization, that feeling. And I crawled upstairs, went into my room, and I fell to the floor. And I was just broken, totally. And in that brokenness, I leaned up and I said, God, please help me. You never believe what happened. He pretty much picked me up and he put me on the side of the bed and he said, you know what, make a phone call. So, you know, I called my brother, the only person in the world I could talk to about all the trouble that I was in. And my brother said, well, you know, hey, you know, I heard of this little program and it helped his son. It might help me too. And he helped me make the call. And there's a man in this room that answered it. And that was on November 27th, 1999. And had it not been for that person answering that phone, there ain't no telling where I'd be. I'd probably be dead. He says, you know, you just sit right there. He says, give me 5 minutes. I'm going to have somebody call you back. 5 minutes later, this woman was on the phone talking to me. Said, hey, just do me a favor. Just don't drink today. Meet me at this little church over here in Craddock. I'm like, oh, well, I live in Craddock. You know, so a block from my house was this little church. And sure enough, that was my introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was so scared when I first went up them steps. That feeling when you first come into the room, like, who do I know? Are these people going to know me? My in-laws were sitting on the porch, Bruce and Rebecca. And I mean, it just scared the tar out of me. And the next thing you know, they sat me down at the table with them, and they gave me a big book. And then after that meeting, that girl says, you know what, here's my phone number. She says, why don't you call me? You know, if you feel fearful, you feel like you're going to drink, you know, you got a problem, whatever, just call me. Man, you talk about blowing up a telephone. I mean, you know, like 2 solid months worth of blowing up a telephone, you know. I was out of work. I'm, you know, Christmas was coming. I mean, you know, I'm a parent. I got, you know, calamity, right? And that girl, she sat there and she started reading that big book with me. And she got me through my first step, got in the middle of my floor and said a prayer and asked God to just take me, you know, and guide me and direct me. And it was the strangest thing, because after we did the first step, and we did the second step, and we did the first step, third step, and I mean, there's no doubt I was an alcoholic because I was already in the rooms, you know. But anyhow, I, you know, came to believe in a power. Of course, I always believed in a power. I didn't have a lot of trust in it or a lot of faith in it, but I always believed in something, you know. So after I did that third step prayer with her, she says, well, you're going to have to get a new sponsor. And I'm like, what do you mean get a new sponsor? She says, well, I've only been in the rooms for a couple months. And she says, and I've only worked the first 3 steps. So I can't help you anymore. And I'm like, oh, wow, you know, now what am I going to do, right? So sure enough, man, you know, this girl named Wendy had offered to be my sponsor, and I accepted, and she made all these rules. Oh, rules. No, I was unruly, you know. From the time I was 12 years old, I was unruly. things like, you know, call me every day, and she wanted me to read in the big book every day, you know. And I mean, this stuff was kind of like, are you serious? You know, I mean, I'm in here, I'm around all you sober people now, and that's good, you know. Well, the truth is I was still very, very sick. My behaviors and my actions had not changed. You know, it took a lot of work. It took a whole lot of work working with my sponsor and getting that 4-step out on paper. And I had seen some real bitter, ugly truths about myself. What a reality check. And she helped me to see things about my character that needed to change. The way I responded to things, the way I reacted to things. Patterns of my behavior that I just should not simply do these things anymore. You know? and that was the whole point of it, you know. I had a it was a ruthless reflection of self. You know, that moment I got really eye to eye with myself, and there was just no denial. And It took me a couple months to actually get through that. You know, I had to really think about it, and I had a pretty complicated childhood. So I wanted to keep blaming everybody else for everything. And every time I'd say, but this person, you know, it's like, no. It's not about what that person did. How did you get into that situation to begin with? Ooh, Charlotte made a decision. See, my decision maker was broke. Anyhow, yeah, I finally finished out, you know, the big book with her and you know, finished on through my steps. And she says, now go find somebody to help. I'm like, what do you mean? She says, well, you know, find, this is your 12-step work, you know, show somebody how you got through the big book, show somebody these steps. So then I found this girl, and sure enough, I was able, I'm like, I'm not very good at this. I don't have a lot of experience or anything because I just learned them myself, and I hadn't really learned to apply them yet. You see, I had a basic understanding of the steps by going through that with a sponsor. And I have to say this is the honest truth. It took me years and years and years of reading through that big book, you know, going to lots of meetings, doing lots of service work before it finally came to me. Oh, I'm just supposed to do these things. And to the point where it became a daily form of living, a habit. You know, I don't go out and intentionally hurt and harm people today. You know, I don't go out and get in relationships for bad reasons. You know, I try to make real friends today. You know, so the steps changed my life. You know, how I treat people to just how I live in, on a daily basis. A lot of people say, well, gosh, you know, how could she really be an alcoholic? Well, I put it all to the test. In years past, a little bit of the raw version here. I've been on my own since I was 12 years old. I was pretty much raised by a MC, which is a motorcycle club, from the time I was 12 to the time I was 21 years old. So I knew the streets. I knew survival. I don't know, you know, I sit there and I think back at some of the things, you know, in the past, and I guess that was some of the hardness of it, is how I made decisions, you know, that placed me in those positions. This is what I want to talk about. There was an old man I meet one time. There was this As Bill Sees It meeting. It was on a Thursday night over in Craddock. We were, you know, go through the little readings and everybody kind of comments on it. And I don't know, I was probably about 3 or 4 years sober. And the guy had said something and it hit me like a brick. He said, you had either lost your faith or you didn't have any to begin with. And it came down like a great big brick in the sky and hit me in the head. Well, I've got faith, you know? But my daily living was so far out of the patterns, you know, of believing in a faith. And I guess the reason I want to share this is because had it not been for the influence of God in my life today, there is no doubt I should have been dead numerous times. Numerous times. I've been kidnapped, I've been knifed, I've been, you know, had guns at my head. I've seen it like in raw form. And to think that I can even stand here today, I was just telling Steve right before the meeting, and to be able to say that My children, grown adult children, are now the age that I was when I first came into the rooms. And my grandchildren are the age that they were when I first came into the rooms. And to just watch this next generation, you know, the whole thing cycle through. I was telling a friend of mine, Lisa, here the other day. I was about 4 years sober. I was really angry. I was just angry, you know. I had been doing these steps. I've been working with others. I've been doing service work and all this stuff that you hear about doing in AA, you know. I was walking this little narrow road and I got mad. I was standing walking down the sidewalk in front of my house and I just screamed it out. I mean, it was crazy. It's like, God, you know, when is my time? You know, I'm doing all this stuff right. When's my time, right? You know what he did? You know how he answered me? I look like an idiot. I'm standing in Craddock on the sidewalk screaming at God, okay? Mm-hmm. He comes up next to me and he puts his arm around. You know what he did? He whispered to me, when is my time? Wow, what a concept. What a concept. You know, in our step work, it tells us to continue to seek spiritual knowledge of God's will in our life. I needed more. So I found myself a little local church and I started seeking some more knowledge. You know, just doing a little deeper readings and some other literature. I had to be full. I had to be full. Because when I came into the rooms, my soul was empty. And I was probably just like Beth. On, you know, or the Suttons or whatever the name, Dutton Ranch. I was just like her. I mean, that's the way I thought. That was my perspective. Do you know who you're messing with? I mean, you know, who did I think I was? So now I'm just grandma, you know. Life is good. I've been blessed with healthy kids. They have strong spiritual lives. I was just reading this thing earlier. I thought it was kind of interesting. I was on Facebook and a friend's posting about this thing about the Sermon on the Mount, okay, and the Beatitudes. And so I'm, you know, Googling about. I'm like, well, why is that not in D.C., you know, trying to get some kind of response to his thing here. And then all of a sudden it comes up, whatever his name is. Anyhow, he writes a book, Fox is his last name, and it's called Sermon on the Mount. And actually, a lot of AA groups use this literature, and it's sold in intergroup offices, and they do this book study on that. And I just thought that was the coolest thing ever. And in what I was reading, it was talking about, you know, places in the big book, you know, where biblical readings were placed into that book. And then it goes back right to the big book, you know. It tells me, you know, to have a relationship with God. God, you're going to sit up here. I'm not going to preach at you. Because I'm going to tell you, it's something you just have to experience for yourself. It is definitely a personal thing. And, but I just thought the reference was pretty neat. It's just something I, you know, it just happened to be running across in literature. Anyhow, back to my story. That's part of my story because I just experienced that. What kept me sober? There was this old man, his name's Vern. A lot of y'all know him. Anyhow, going back over to that meeting there in Craddock, and he says, well, why don't you just stand here and hold the door for everybody? And I'm like, well, what do you mean? Yeah, he said, be the greeter. He says, every time somebody walks up the steps, hold the door for them, shake their hand, introduce yourself, you know. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I was all eager. Oh, wow, I've got something important to do, you know. I instantly became part of. What was the significance of being a greeter? I got to meet and got to know everybody that came through that door. And it was interesting because I was the new one. Right. They already knew it. Well, who you got this girl out here? What is, you know, she's all gung-ho, you know. Mm-hmm. And luckily, one thing I will say is that, you know, being out of work when I was in a couple months there at Christmas time and Thanksgiving and all, I immediately was into service work. Luckily, there in Craddock, they had meetings Monday through Friday at noontime. You know, so I could go to those meetings, help open up, you know, make coffee and chair meetings in there. I didn't really know what I was doing, but they said, just follow the directions. You know, oh, okay. You know, it was that simple. The service work. And I've had a lot of fun with it. Had a lot of fun. We've had great big picnics. You know, they have the Unity Picnic every year. And years ago, we used to have it out at right down the street here. What's the name of that place? Yeah, Planners Club. We used to have it out there. And yeah, it's a funny little story about that too. I remember as a little girl, my neighbors used to always take me to that picnic every year. And I never knew that it was an AA meeting. And we used to have picnic tables down the side of the river, and everybody brought picnic baskets. So it was a real outdoorsy family kind of thing. And she said, yeah, but she says, we have to stay out here because they got a meeting inside. But I never, all them years, never knew that was an AA meeting. And here I was, my very best friend's father. You know, wasn't it? You know how it touches a life and we never even knew it. Yeah, you know, I can imagine my mom saying, oh, she's in a safe place. She's over there, you know. But so anyhow, you know, we'd have big picnics and really get involved in doing things. You know, there's a world of opportunity in AA. All you got to do is say, hey, where can I help? And believe me, somebody will give you a key, ask you to make coffee or clean up or, you know, you can, you know, do service work at different levels, whatever, you know, whatever suits your fancy. But, so that was always a big deal, the service work, but the unity. And I think this is something that really, really helped me a lot, particularly when I was very early in Alcoholics Anonymous. Is I'm telling you, we'd have them big meetings over there at that church on Saturday night, and afterwards we all, and I'm talking like 20 of us, would all go out and eat dinner or breakfast, or sometimes we'd leave there and we'd go over to the Easy Does It Club every Saturday night. They had dances. So it was like, oh, somewhere to be. Oh, I don't have to be alone. You know, going back into that big old empty house by myself or, you know. So the unity was a very, very big factor for me. And, you know, you talk about unity today. Lisa over here, she was my grand sponsor like 20 years ago. Wow. You know, she was my sponsor that long ago. And here we run back into each other, you know. I think that's pretty cool, you know? And no matter where you go, you talk about how large this fellowship is. I sold my house over there in Craddock. I moved down to West Palm Beach, Florida. Now, I know nobody in this town, but I did know AA. Mm-hmm. And I was able to find out where the meeting was, walk into a clubhouse and get, you know, the meeting list that they had for down there, and I started meeting hopping, and next thing you know, I found where I was supposed to be. You know, if you're at the north end, then you better be dressed fancy and have nice cars. You know, down where I was comfortable, we all had motorcycles, so, you know, we were good. You know, had a lot of fun down there. You know, they had picnics every weekend at a park somewhere, you know. So there's just so much fellowship involved, no matter where you go. And you talk about just, you know, living in recovery. Oh, boy, I mean, that's kind of a scary word for a lot of people, you know. You know, but not today. It's given me a new lease on life. It's given me a whole new way to live. And that's something I didn't learn as a child. That is something I didn't have any structure whatsoever growing up. So, you know, and I've been in numerous correctional facilities or rehabilitational. Let me see, what's the right word for that? Yeah. You know, I've been rehabilitated a few times. Okay? So, you know, I had just, you know, it was always, okay, here you go, see ya. You know, okay, now what do I do? You know, and it was always 2 weeks right back to the same old people, places, and things because that's what I knew how to survive. Coming in here, I talk about leaning on your faith and just knowing that regardless of, no matter what happens in your life, okay, you can stay sober, you can stay clean. I went through a period where I was on some chemotherapy medicine, and during this 2 year period, I started my chemo, I lost my job, my oldest son committed suicide, my husband left, and then I lost my home. I had 10 boxes, my dog, and my truck. And we took off down the road to South Florida because I figured if anything, I could live in my truck, see? It was the weirdest thing. We were about coming into West Palm Beach down 95. There's a sign right at the 30-mile marker. I'm like, you know, having this conversation, you know, I mean, this is kind of insane. I just jump in my truck, make this run, you know. And I had to have this conversation with God. Here I am, like, who am I, right? Yeah, well, and I had to say this out loud. You know, am I where I'm supposed to be? Am I where I'm supposed to be? And I says, you know how I'm a real hard head. I had to have clear cut revelation. Am I where I'm supposed to be? Driving down 95 that day, that sky was just perfectly blue, clear sky. I'm telling you, the sign of the fish came in two stripes in that highway in front of me. I was exactly where I needed to be. I had nothing but 100% dependence upon God. I was entirely shed of the material world. What is my purpose in life? What am I doing here? And recovery down there is a lot different, you know. They call West Palm Beach the recovery capital of the world. They also call it the drug capital of the world. Okay? And I'm going to tell you, them rooms down there, you know, they got all these rehabs, fancy rehabs. They bust everybody to the AA meeting. And 40 people would pile off of that bus. And I work with girls, you know, to see so many young alcoholic addict girls pleading for help. Probably one of the saddest things I've ever seen. I heard some stories from girls down there. You know, this one girl, she was like with MS-13, and I'm thinking, okay, you know, but just to hear that girl speak about recovery, you know, I mean, I thought I had a deep story. That girl had a deep story. You know, the gift of desperation. And I sat there at my table Monday through Thursday, 4 days a week, from noon to 1 o'clock with a sponsee sitting at my table going through Big Book. Just boom, boom. And I think what's really cool is that a lot of them are still my friends today. And I've watched them grow. It's been 10 years since I've been down there. I watch them get married and have children and go on with their lives. But, you know, it's quite the experience, they say, when, you know, you see the lights come on in others. So, you know, that's really what it's all about. You know, it's a new way to live. I tried it. It worked for me. It's worked for hundreds and millions at this point before me. And it can work for you, too. All you have to do is do the work. I'm going to close with that. Thank you for letting me share.
Thanks, Charlotte. Really appreciate that. So because we have some time, I'm going to ask some no-notice people to come up here and speak about Step 10. So first, I'd like to have our resident cowboy come up. Steve, would you talk about Step 10? Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.